Hi, this is Lisa, and you are listening to I Love That Movie. This podcast is for movie lovers. It's not an unbiased opinion. It's not a straightforward review. It's just a couple people talking about a movie that they love. The format is each week I have a guest, and that guest and I discuss a movie that they love, something they're obsessed with, something they connect with. We'll talk about the plot, the director, and the actors, but we'll also talk about the personal connection my guest has with that movie. So if that sounds like something you want to listen to, keep listening. This is Lisa, and if you want to catch up with me on X, you can reach me at ILTM Podcast. I'm also on Instagram at I Love That Movie Podcast, and we have a Patreon. The show is always free, but if you want to support us on there, you can. That's at Patreon. I Love That Movie. And you get a weekly bonus episode of everything else I'm watching besides what we're covering on the show. So if you want to join us on there, we'd appreciate it. And if you like what you hear today, please subscribe and rate the show. It does help new listeners find us. Well, I have some returning guests. I have the Mocky Horror Picture Show. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Been a while.
Thank you for having us.
I know.
Yeah.
So I've got Albie, Liz, and Danny on. Did y'all want to kind of introduce yourselves a little bit?
Who wants to go first?
You can go.
Okay, I'm Albie Robles. I'm a voice actor. I do a lot of audiobooks as well, and I've done things like One Piece. I have the Scare Me podcast, and anyway, I've joined last year, was it, or the year before, Mocky Horror, and I've just absolutely loved doing that with these two. They're fantastic.
I lost track of time.
Oh, no.
It's been at least a year.
Yeah, at least a year, a little more, I think. I'm Liz, and I've done random comedy in the past all around DFW, and I started Mocky Horror when Danny suggested it. I think we've been working on it for 5-6 years at this point.
Yeah, and I'm Danny Gallagher. Like Liz said, we co-created the Mocky Horror Picture Show, and we're performing this Thursday at 9:15 p.m. at the Texas Theater for our next live riff, where we're going to be doing The Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, 9:15 at the Texas Theater.
Yeah, tickets at thetexastheater.com or just Google Texas Theater.
Well, thank y'all so much for returning. I know that you're back to plug something. So for people that typically listen to my show, normally we pick a movie that somebody loves and we talk about it. This is a little bit different. We're kind of plugging a upcoming event for the Mocky Horror Picture Show. And so they're going to talk about a movie at that event. And that movie is called
The Lawnmower Man.
Yes. Yep. This is from 1992.
And I guess you could say when we're on, we talk about movies that we've kind of sort of learned to love. I don't know what you guys would say about this one.
This one's interesting because, yes, it's bad.
It has an interesting history.
Yeah, I think what makes it entertaining is the fact that it started out as a movie that based on a Stephen King short story, and then through the course of legal means, that was no longer the case. But it still has that stamp on it. You can't erase the stamp that it's like, oh, it started as a Stephen King vehicle, but it's
well. I'd like to clarify this a little bit. The studio that owned the rights basically was about to lose the rights. They were sitting.
New Line Cinema, right?
And so, yeah, I believe so.
Yep.
And so they were like just saying, "Okay, we got to get this made. Let's kick this into production." And when they met with the director, he said, "Well, it's great because I have the script that I really like about virtual reality." And they changed that script a little bit to include lawnmower references and added in some Stephen King references, and they used this entirely different movie to say that it was based on this book.
Yeah. I'm going to set the stage for our listeners. Here's a summary. We're not going to talk in depth about the movie probably because we haven't, well, at least I haven't seen it yet. So we're doing this a little bit in reverse. But if this kind of sets the stage for what kind of film you're in store for, here you go. I got this off of Wikipedia. The eccentric Dr. Lawrence Angelo put the mentally disabled landscaper Job Smith on a regimen of experimental pills and computer-simulated training sequences in hopes of augmenting the man's intelligence. In time, Job becomes noticeably brighter and also begins to fare much better with the opposite sex. Weird sentence. Anyways, as he develops psychic powers, he realizes that those around him have taken advantage of his simplicity his whole life, and he plots a bloody revenge. So I'm sure, first off, that this film will tastefully handle mental disability, but
no, it won't.
Yeah, I sense that from reading that description.
I think either Albie or Danny called it the poor man's Flowers for Algernon, which I think is a good description.
Well, in fact, this is kind of a little outrageous to the point where when they made the kind of jokes about this in what is the comedy called with
Tropic Thunder?
Yes, in Tropic Thunder. The look of Simple Jack, if you look at a picture of Simple Jack and you look at a picture of Job in this movie, it's the same hair and it's the exact same wardrobe. So Simple Jack is modeled after Job in this movie.
Yikes. Many red flags already. This was directed by Brett Leonard. So he's most known for Lawnmower Man and another movie called Virtuosity, which both feature groundbreaking computer animation and visual effects. And I read that the Lawnmower Man is considered the first seminal film to feature virtual reality as a cautionary tale, becoming the number one commercially successful independent film of 1992, budgeted at under $6 million and eventually earning over $150
million. Yeah, made money. It made money because there's a sequel. There's a sequel.
Wow.
Matt Frewer, who did Max Headroom.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting connection. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, the Virtuosity, or it's funny you mentioned that because that's actually like a fun movie. I think that was like Russell Crowe's first big movie.
Oh wow! Yeah, it came out in 1995.
Yeah, he plays the alien, and he totally hams it up. He's like a program. He's programmed to be a serial killer, so that he can train, but he's programmed in virtual reality to be like the ultimate like bad guy, so that police can like train in you know hostage situations and stuff.
Oh.
And through a series of things, he gets out and goes berserk in the real world, and he totally hams it up, which is what makes it fun. So I actually think it's a decent movie.
I went to see that 4 times in the theater when it came out. I loved it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and with Denzel Washington, so you know it's, you know.
What you're saying sort of reminds me of the way people describe that Upgrade movie a little bit.
Yeah, it is kind of similar to that. Except it's like 80s.
Yeah.
It's like an 80s action movie in the 90s basically.
Mm.
And the other thing is like it's the Lawnmower Man supposed to be this it's this cautionary tale about technology, but it assumes virtual reality will do things that it just will never be capable of doing.
Yeah. I read that New Line Cinema attained the story as you were saying earlier, Albie, and but the producers had an unrelated script called Cyber God. And for economical reasons, they just put King's title on Cyber God. So really just I mean, capitalizing on his name alone. And I guess that leaked or went public, and King was really upset, you know, at the abuse of his name, sued the studio, and to have his title and name removed, which the studio didn't do. But eventually they had to pay $10,000 in full profits to King. So they had to pay, I guess, like they lost it all. It sounds like.
Oh, yeah, wow. because he won the lawsuit and they took it off for just a little bit, and then right before they released the movie, they slapped it back on there.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you go and read his original short story, it's under 10 pages, and it's just about, I don't think it's even like a spoiler for the story to say it. It's about a guy who mows lawns who's creepy and his creepy lawnmower, and that's about it.
Right. I also read that this was, it was discovered through FBI tapes, and I'm sure you're wondering where this is going when I say that, that this was the former Waco cult leader David Koresh's favorite film.
Oh,
wow. So, wow.
I had not heard that.
Yeah, so.
I wish I'd known like that. I would have worked it into the marketing.
so many dumpster fire type things associated with this.
Oh my gosh, that's the biggest red flag of all.
I know. and the last little tidbit I have is that the 8 minutes of computer generated effects took 7 people 8 months to complete, and a budget of $500,000. Was that well spent? I haven't seen the movie. What are y'all's thoughts?
I would say yes, because at the time I remember this blowing everybody's minds. Like when I went to see it, I was really put off that it wasn't based on the story, because I didn't know it would be that different. And so I was really put off by that. But at the same time, like I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're seeing this in a movie now. People loved it, the look of it. It was a big deal when it came out. It was a big part of the marketing for it too.
This was, what year was this again? 1992? 93. Okay. So it predates Toy Story by at least 2 years. The first Toy Story, the first Toy Story, I think is 95 or 96.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm looking it up now.
The other hand, wasn't Jurassic Park like 2 years before?
Yeah, it's certainly
But that was more practical effects than.
That's true.
Than. Like computer generated. I mean, I'm sure there was some computer.
Yeah, but none of the computer stuff was really visible as a, in fact, some of the computer.
No, totally.
Still look better than some of today's computer effects, which is crazy to me. But yeah, I guess it was the idea that virtual reality of there being like a game that looked like that, maybe, or just the idea of being inside of a game with that was this whole world around you too, was a fascinating thought.
Right.
It's interesting. I feel like, you know, maybe this is going a little too deep with this, but I feel like sci-fi tends to reflect the fears, concerns of the time. And I guess virtual reality was just like a big thing that everyone was excited about, didn't really understand. And that's why it comes across so disjointed and like not making a lot of sense with what we think of.
Which I don't get, because I remember virtual reality back then, and it was like, it's not, first of all, it was huge. You couldn't, you had to literally like stand in a thing and put the headset on to walk around, and the graphics looked like, how do I describe it? They looked like a pre-beta Minecraft.
Yes, I was about to say Minecraft.
Like
everything looked like that, and people would be like, aren't these graphics amazing? And I remember even in the 90s thinking, graphics aren't amazing yet.
No, and so, and I remember this movie coming out and being like, oh, it's a cautionary tale about first. And I was like, who's going to be so influenced by like, oh, I can walk around in a fake world, so it's going to make me evil. Like, I did not understand the connection they were trying to make.
I still don't. And also, you still have to wear a headset. So anyway.
Right.
I just looked up when a Virtual Boy came out, and that was, if y'all remember that, it was a video game system. And it was not a success from what I know of it. It came out in 1995, so maybe that calmed anyone's fear of the stuff happening.
Well, I went to the video game museum a couple of years ago, and they have a virtual boy there that you can use, and you can try it out. And I could see why it was a failure. It was horrible.
You're like, this won't make people evil. It sucks. So it won't have any power to do that.
No influence there.
But did you play it? And then did you have a god complex?
Well, yes, but I didn't think that was why. I just kind of do that sometimes.
It's just I don't get what it's trying to, like, if it was like a general cautionary tale about technology, because you see the thing. So you see, this isn't a spoiler, it's just a plot point. Dr. Lawrence is played by Pierce Brosnan. He has to find a new test up, or he wants to do it, upgrade his tests from animals to humans. And he meets Job, who's this, works for this greenskeeper who he cuts lawns for a living. And he starts doing these experiments and basically injects him with some kind of drug and does these VR experiments. And I'm looking at the VR experiments and I'm like, it's just a kaleidoscope. Like if that's all it takes to turn you evil or make you smarter,
it's
and then
virtual
give you
a reality tour through a hypercolor shirt,
right?
But he's evil because he was mistreated. Is that?
I think it's the drugs. So they don't really explain the science of, like, okay, what is he injecting him with? That helps enhance these virtual reality treatments. If at first it just makes him smarter, and then it turns him into God, basically.
Here's what I'm thinking. Maybe it is the cautionary tale. Maybe it's a little more hidden than that. Maybe it's not so much turning somebody evil or whatever, but I think maybe it's about that as virtual reality gets more prominent, that it's unavoidable that it will eventually be used for warfare, like to try to use to weaponize it, which I guess has happened. I think that's how they fly a lot of the drones or whatever. The attack drones, I think they do that way now. But,
oh, yeah, there's actually some of that that got cut from the script, some dialogue about war and stuff, or using it for that.
Yeah, so maybe that's the cautionary tale. I don't know.
But it's like, I have a VR headset, and the worst, the most damage I could cause is if somebody walks into my field of arm reach, I smack him in the head with the controller. Like, that's the most, that's literally the most damage I could. Maybe if I had a knife in my hand and I accidentally, you know, I don't know what game would require a knife. Require picking up a knife. Maybe that's what they're saying. Like,
okay, that's a sketch, you know, that we need to make. Is somebody
that's what I was thinking.
A new virtual reality game that comes with a knife that you have to use with it.
Oh, and speaking, so backtracking, so leading up to this, so we've done a video, we've done, it feels like we've done like a lot of video game movies in the past, and I didn't, but it, to me it was the Stephen King thing that more kind of interested me. The fact that it's like the only Stephen King movie that's not connected to Stephen King in any way. So with the marketing, we ended up leaning into the Stephen King angle. And so all week we've been, or all month we've been watching some of Stephen King's worst adaptations on Twitch. And we wrote a sketch that leans into the Stephen King side. And it just hit me the other day. I was like, Stephen King's name doesn't even show up in this movie. It's just purely like, it's purely just like legend. And so it was fun because we got to go back and watch a bunch of Stephen King movies. In fact, this Tuesday, we're going to watch a good Stephen King movie. In my opinion, the best Stephen King movie.
I can't wait to see what it's going to be.
But it's fun to watch because it's like there's still like hints of King in this movie. Like, even though he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I feel like they're like kind tropes. Yeah, they were using some of his tropes and a little bit of like trying to imitate his writing style with the dialogue.
Right.
Too, I think.
But it comes off like almost like a really bad Mel Brooks style parody of Stephen King movies, which actually is not a bad, which I actually would like to try someday. So there's like, you know, the misaffected character who, you know, gets revenge on his tormentors. And the what I actually, you're Albie, probably you know Stephen King movies better than anybody in this room as a horror fan. Is there anything like from this movie you recognize? It's like,
I think the
Stephen King style.
The biggest thing that they did to make it Stephen King is simply, and really the only thing other than adding a lawnmower to it to fit the title,
right,
was having the big powerful entity, like government entity that's there, be,
yeah,
they changed that to be the shop, which is an entity that's appeared in several Stephen King novels and short stories. That's who was after the kid in Firestarter. That's who tried to come into town in the Tommyknockers and did not make it into town because they were killed by a soda machine, a flying soda machine. So the shop has always been very prominent in there. And in the Langoliers, I don't know if you ever saw the Langoliers, which was a terrible movie, but I liked the story a lot. The guy that was like a secret agent that happened to be there, that was a big reason why they survived, that was he worked for the shop.
Didn't know they stole the shop that way. No wonder Stephen King was, well, he was mad for a variety of reasons.
Well, I'm sure that they're not quite stealing. If they're adapting, or they just changed that to be just to make it fit the Stephen King world.
Right. Basically.
And the head, another spoiler, I don't think this will be.
I think people will be okay if they're spoiled.
Yeah. The head of the shop is played by, I think his name is Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, played Hank Schrader on Breaking Bad.
Oh, wow.
And he plays it like, I don't want to reveal the way we do it in our jokes, but he plays it. My first impression was the way he plays it is he's Hedonism Bot from Futurama.
That's funny.
He talks just like him. He's like, oh, we must stop. We must harness this technology. But it's the guy that played Hank from Breaking Bad, who was like a macho kind of.
Oh, are you like talking about the cool another? Uncle. It's the head of. Oh, I might be
the director, not Tim's. The director, the guy that's on the screen. Okay. The guy who, when he does video screens, like puts his camera right. He must be sitting like 3 inches from the camera, because all you see on the screen is just his giant head. But it's one of those things, like, I don't mean to pigeonhole him, but I can't not think of him as Hank from Breaking Bad.
Oh, for sure.
Because he was just so good in that. And,
He's talking like...
Yes, the way Albie's doing it. The way Albie's doing it. He's literally like, it's like, you can't see anything in the background of the room. Like, it's just his face.
That's funny.
And it's just like, and he's always like conferencing with Tim's, who's like his liaison at the lab. And it's like they're in a big conference room and it's this big screen, but his face is like covering the whole screen and it's hilarious. And so I guess I forgot about the shop trope as a King thing. And also just they try to capture King's mood and it just doesn't, when King's not involved or King's not the story, like you can tell, like it just doesn't have that vibe.
And the main character, does he end up getting some sort of psychic powers too? I thought I read.
Yes.
That's another King trope too.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh no, you're fine, Liz. They go back to that well a lot of psychic powers. Almost everything.
Actually, it's bigger than that. He gets God powers. He basically becomes God, which is
because all of his mind is opened up. You know, they're doing that thing about that we use whatever percentage of our brain, but what happens if we open up the whole brain? And so it's he becomes a very powerful being.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, like, Dr. Lawrence, like kind of the scientist, he seems to have a bit of a drinking problem. So yeah, they just seem to be kind of putting.
But even that, they don't go like. Full. It's like I didn't even notice it till you mentioned it, which to me is the bigger problem than virtual reality.
Yeah,
is like drunk. You know, doctors who drink performing on patients. I'm more worried about that than
good point.
Than if I, you know, and then playing Walking Dead Redemption too long on my Oculus.
Yeah, I also think going back to like the Stephen King. Not being happy that his name is on this. I mean, that says a lot right there, because Right. There have been so many movies that he did have his name on that you think, I'm thinking like Maximum Overdrive or, you know, things like that, where you're like,
yeah,
wow, like he's proud to have his name on that, but not this. So that tells you something.
Which I actually think is a really great movie because it's just pure. No, it's fine. Like when I first saw it, I thought it was bad. And then someone reminded me, like, you know, Stephen King made that like at the height of his cocaine addiction. And I was like, it just changed the whole movie. Like it made it, no, I'm not encouraging people to do cocaine, but it made it like, oh, so that was just pure like King. Like King just got to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah, he was like unhinged, I think.
And I was like, and I had a whole different appreciation for it. And I was like, it's actually it's a pretty bitching movie. I mean,
it seems like a movie made on a lot of cocaine. It really feels like that. It really supercharged, high octane movie.
Yeah, you know, Lisa, I understand where you're coming from. I'm like, you know, we were talking about this. I was like, what bad movie should we do on Twitch or whatever? I'm like, oh, yeah. Maximum Overdrive. That's a terrible movie. And then Albie and Danny go, no.
Oh, no, that's Danny. I would riff the tar out of that. That would be a really fun one.
It's a very bro-y movie, I guess. It's like.
No, I think it's fun as like a bad movie. But, yeah, no, but like, no, you've got a good point though, just in general, like he was totally like, he didn't sue the people who made the Langoliers and the special effects and that.
Right.
Because he loves the Langoliers. It's so weird.
Really?
He went through this whole thing in the 90s and early 2000s of like, ABC did several miniseries adaptations of his works, and they were all done by Mick Garris, who had done The Stand. And like The Stand, as it came out, was like a really solid script.
It
was just a little cheesy, in I think because of the directing of it. And Mick Garris just kind of did The Shining miniseries when that came out, and he did The Langoliers. They were so bad. And I think to me, it's that's what I point out to when people complain I don't like this adaptation because they changed all this stuff. You have to adapt it and you have to change it, because The Langoliers and The Shining are the most perfect adaptations I've ever seen as far as following, being true to the story. And I think they are King's worst movies. They're just so bad, but he loves them. Like he keeps going back to Mick Garris for this for a while. They're atrocious.
He was traumatized by Kubrick in a way, I guess. And he was like, no.
Which always struck me out, because he hates that movie, and everybody universally agrees it's one of the best horror movies ever made.
Yeah, I find out why he doesn't like it, like listening to interviews and stuff. But I think, no, from what Albie was saying about Mick Garris, I think he went too far in the other direction.
Right. But I'm like, so we watched, we didn't watch the whole Stephen King miniseries because I couldn't make it through it.
Yeah.
And it's because it's, what is it, like 6 hours long?
Mm-hmm.
It's like three episodes, 2 hours each or something. And we ended up just cutting to the end, and it has a happy ending.
Yep.
And I'm like, isn't this movie about a father who goes crazy and tries to kill his family? Like,
but I feel like it's also about Stephen King and his addiction.
No,
so he makes the father a good guy, because if he ends up being a bad guy, then he's a, I don't know.
To me, it's like, but how do you make that? And I haven't read the book, so maybe.
The book is similar. I mean, the book is like more magical and fun, I think, than the Kubrick film. But I think the Kubrick film is probably more realistic, as crazy as it is.
Which again, it's about a guy who murders his family. I think the magical fun train has left the station.
You would think.
I'm sure he makes it work. I don't mean to disparage it.
No, I kind of prefer the movie, even though I have read the book. But you know, that's why some people like that love Dr. Sleep are like, oh, this is like, I've had friends that are like, this is better, that's so much better than The Shining. And I'm thinking, well, it's better than The Shining if you want some redemption for the main character, definitely. But if you don't care about that, I don't know know that it's better. You know, right. That's my opinion. But
well, so many Stephen King fans just latch on to him not liking that movie, and they just say, "I hate that movie. I hate that movie," and they won't look at the fact that the cinematic masterpiece that it is still recognized as being one of the best horror movies of all time,
right?
And how important that movie is and how popular it is after so many decades of mm-hmm. it being released.
Right.
However, I will say that I thought this was really cool. When Mike Flanagan was going to make the sequel to The Shining called Dr. Sleep, which was a great book, but the book is definitely a sequel to his book. And because the book and the movie end very differently, everybody was wondering, well, what's he going to do? Is he making a sequel to the book or is he making a sequel to the movie? And he ended up kind of doing both at the same time. It was very interesting, and it was really great, to the point where Stephen King's statement that he made after that was, he said, "This movie is so good. To me, this consolidates my book and Kubrick's movie." Like, it put him at peace with the movie, to where they kind of both exist.
Yeah, because
that was really cool.
The Shining that Kubrick did, it's less optimistic, it's less magical too. I mean, even though there's some supernatural elements, it's less. I feel like King's always got like the same elements of, again, like the psychic powers, but like leaning into the funness of that and the goofiness of that. I don't know, in a lot of his books, I think it was missing that, and so I can understand why he did. Also, it portrays an alcoholic, abusive father as bad, which that is bad, but you know, he didn't like that, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it was more of a redemption arc at the end in the book, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know that there is any redemption for him in the book. I think they did put in a last minute little something at the end of the miniseries of him kind of coming back and snapping to it and being like, "Wait, no, what am I doing?" And I don't think that happened at all in the book. In the book, if I remember correctly, it's just him running, screaming to the basement, saying, "This mustn't happen. It mustn't. And I think that's kind of the last thoughts he has.
Yeah, I think it's just, it humanizes him more in the book. And there's
that's a better way to put it.
Yeah, and like there's a lot of, like in the miniseries, there's the sculptures coming to life, the landscape sculptures, and like just things that like, I think they were like, in the movie, they remove that because it's kind of like more fun and whimsical sounding than
it wouldn't have scary. Worked in Kubrick's movie.
No.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite work in the miniseries. I mean, I was glad to see them put it in because that was such a big part of the book, but it just didn't come off as being as scary as it could have.
Yeah. I've always felt that Stephen King's horror is on the verge of being fantasy also. And so sometimes that translates into a movie and sometimes it doesn't. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, I'm looking at a list of Stephen King films or, you know, things, Stephen King related films. It's like, sometimes I forget how many movies are actually Stephen King stories.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy.
We, again, I won't spoil anything, but for the movie, we compiled a list.
Oh really?
Of movies and his miniseries. We had to leave a couple of them off. I forget which ones.
Well, we had to leave a lot off because there's probably been 100 of them.
We did the full list. I think when I compiled it, it was about like 40 or 50 something.
Wow.
But a lot of those were like anthologies, which I love. Anthologies are my favorite thing just ever. And there were some I forgot, like Creepshow 2.
Oh yeah.
Which isn't, I mean, the first Creepshow's genius and Creepshow 2 has its place, too, but but his story, The Raft, is like the standout from that movie, in my opinion.
Mm.
Because it's just so just pulpy and like it's what you'd expect from a horror comic. I was trying to think, what's another one? Oh, Cat's Eye is fun too. I think that's two Stephen King stories in that one. Two of the three are his stories.
Oh, okay. Didn't realize that. Makes sense,
Yeah. though. But yeah, it's like going back over the list, it's like, God, Hollywood's gone to him for a lot.
Yeah, and I can understand him being protective of his brand, even if at times it was strange.
But then you look at something like what was the one you mentioned, the Langoliers, which is just an awful movie. He's like, he's okay with this? I don't mean to call him out as a hypocrite or anything, but I'm just like,
No, no.
does he get any say? Like Cell, which I read half a Cell, and then when it started to turn a certain way, I kind of just gave up. But
Yeah.
I still was like, I want to see this as a movie. And it had everything going for heads. It had John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson and Stacy Keach in a movie about zombies, which is like something that new territory for Stephen King, and none of it works. None of you like it's like when somebody pitched Congo and it's like, hey, we got the dude from Jurassic Park to produce, and we got Bruce Campbell in it, and we got the writer from, I forget who it was, from what was the writer from some other Spielberg movie, and then Congo came out and it's awful. It's like you can have everything going for it and still fail epically.
Yeah, it's listed as one of the top 10 worst films of his is Cell, so
Yeah.
yeah.
It's like I don't even think it went to theaters. I think it got I literally I think it got like the Idiocracy treatment. Like it got one theater in like Branson and one theater in
Wow.
Sacramento and one theater in Austin, and then it just was like, okay, we released it. We contractually done our job, because I don't
For
ever remember it coming out in theaters.
the worst King film that I've seen in theaters that I just can't handle it. Actually, it's got some crossover from this movie in some ways, but it's Dreamcatcher.
Yes,
That
that's
was
an
truly
epic one.
terrible.
Oh man, yeah.
Once again, insensitive handling of somebody who,
Jason
you
Lee, I
know,
think.
yeah.
And what is that even about? I've never bothered to look it up.
Their friend who I think has a mental disability, they later find out is an alien. And
Now, that was in,
also
you
was in the
lost me
movie.
before you finished that sentence.
That was in the movie, though. That was not the case in the book.
Oh, really? Okay, well, that's
Yeah,
good.
like it
I,
was a
again, I think
very
the
stupid change that they made for that
yeah,
movie.
very insensitive again, handling of something. And then also, the biggest thing I remember is that they would poop aliens out, and it would mess them up when that
God.
happened. It was just so gross,
God.
disgusting.
Are we sure like Trey Parker and Matt Stone didn't write this
Yeah,
script? It
I
sounds
remember
like a
they
South
called
Park
it.
episode.
It seriously does, and I mean, people called it Dream Crapper because literally people like poop themselves to death in the movie. I don't know whose idea that was or if that was in the book, but it was
Yeah, that was
grotesque.
in the book, but
Yeah.
it's all it, it it all a lot of the stuff that works in the book does not work in the movie.
Yeah. Shocking.
Also, it's good you bring that up, because this character has a character who is mentally challenged, or I don't know if I'm saying the correct term, but it's not, but it's done. So again, I think Albie said it was like he looks like Simple Jack from Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, it's just handled very, very badly. So.
But it's not like described exactly. It's just like it's the archetypal example of Hollywood does not understand how to create characters that are accurate, so they just
Yeah.
throw every, like he literally wears overalls
Right.
for the first half of the movie. And I get he's a lawnmower, you
But
know, that's his job. And it's, but it's like, oh, well, but they're not coming out and saying what it is.
yeah,
So
because they
just to,
know it's not a
right.
good idea to even be portraying this, so they don't ever name it.
But they don't,
Yeah.
but it's this weird problem Hollywood has of like, well, we can't say it, but if we make it really over the top, then it's okay, which I've never understood. And
Right.
I'm not a PC. I'm not trying to say like this movie isn't PC. I mean, it's the character isn't, but it's just an interesting, like, trend I notice, which is like, well, if we go really hard on the stereotype and know that it's, and we don't connect it to anything, then it's okay.
Right. It's like, wow, this went through weird. A lot of different people and still right. happened. Like several people signed off on this somehow.
Yeah, that's weird. I know people have mixed feelings about Forrest Gump, but they put a label on it. They're like, Forrest has an IQ of X, whatever it was. And
right.
that's why he has these problems. And yeah, so that's probably better than just this ambiguous, like, he's not quite right.
Yeah, but I think it does tell you a lot about the headspace of us in 1990s, right?
Like, yeah,
just something that I think about that all the time when you watch older films, and I'm like, you know, everyone's like, oh, everyone is so sensitive now. It's like, well, thank goodness. I mean, like some of the stuff
on
screen was so terrible. Like,
yeah, wow.
Yeah. The director's cut is even worse. First of all, I don't know why. So there's a scene. The very first scene is, so Dr. Lawrence is experiments. He starts testing them on chimps. And the chimp goes crazy and gets a god complex and develops a plan to like escape, and he kills a guard and so on. And he escapes the lab. And the very next scene is Job makes friends with the monkey.
Oh.
And
oh boy.
It's the dumbest. Oh. And there's a standoff with police because he doesn't want to give up the chimp. And I forget how it ends, but basically, you know, but it's like all the stereotypes. It's like even worse. It's like the chimp's my friend.
Oh god.
And that's how the doctor discovers Job and starts and needs a human test subject and figures he's perfect for it. And I'm just like, why would you even release it as a director's cut? Like, you're just confirming that, like, that nobody knows what they're doing with this character,
right?
And they also know enough to not include that scene, which pisses me off a little bit.
So, and you also just touched on something that is interesting about stuff like this. I mean, I get that it's sort of like I don't know, like a cautionary tale or whatever. But like this assumption that the access alone makes people evil is so strange.
Right.
What? But I don't know.
It feels like they're trying to maybe parody the, you know, the whole video games make are bad for kids.
Oh yeah, like desensitize people.
Right.
Violence. Yeah, like, maybe it is a commentary on that. I don't know.
But it doesn't. It doesn't connect, because again, I don't see what the. Like if the programs Job were playing were like training, like was like, okay, he's in a virtual shooting game, like that's fine. But again, the programs are just kaleidoscopes that flash light in his eyes. And he does it so much at one point, he's like, I saw God. And I was like, you saw God in like what, Beat Saber? Because that's basically what you were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes kids evil. You didn't know that?
Right.
I don't know that, like, the kaleidoscope symbols look like vaguely occult to me or
that's
something.
True. That's so true.
Maybe it's like,
yeah.
Supernatural. Okay.
Yeah.
They don't really explain, like, what the drugs do, which I think is the bigger factor than virtual reality.
It's not like all sci-fi has to be like hard sci-fi, but at the same time,
no, I get it. Yeah,
there should be some relevant information that the audience
but at some point,
so that we can understand.
At some point, this mix of chemicals and the whatever the virtual reality does to improve his memory or his comprehension or whatever, like it literally turns him into God.
Yeah,
there's like I was working on the transcript. Last night, and I think we have the director's cut of it, so it's got extra scenes in there, and they kind of explain this stuff, but not they're very exposition heavy, not great dialogue, so I'm glad I don't know, but they didn't do a good job translating that over to the finished product, if that's what they were going for.
Like, I remember the short story, I don't remember if they explain what causes him to be able to have telekinesis.
That stuff isn't in the Oh, I guess, yeah.
I mean, the virtual reality stuff isn't in there, but I don't know if.
Yeah, there's something like that.
If there's a revenge angle. Oh, also, one character I want to mention is Job's, I guess, his boss. Not the priest. What's that actor's name? It's Juliette Lewis's father. I can't remember that actor.
Oh, the character's Terry. Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
Let me pull it up.
I can't remember.
He passed away like a few years ago. He's one of those guys you see in like a million things. Jeffrey Lewis. And Jeffrey Lewis is actually a great actor. He's done like so many great things. This is not one of them.
Thank you for clarifying.
He's like Job's kind of confidant in the beginning, and he's an Irish greenskeeper, and I say that because he does the most forced Irish accent I think I've ever heard. There are cops in movies in the 50s that have less of an Irish accent than this character.
Yeah, I think he's like mentioning leprechauns and stuff.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
What the heck?
At one point, he literally says, "Oh, stars and clovers."
That's funny.
And of course, he drinks too. But yeah, he always carries a flask. So, which kind of makes me like the character. He's really the only likable person in this movie. I'm trying to think what I let's see. He's also one of those it guys, which is kind of like an obsession of mine, is to be like, oh, he was in Yellow Jackets. That's what it was.
Oh.
But he's also one of those like, oh, I know that guy's name, like J.O. Sanders, yeah. and all the those
character actors.
Mm-hmm. So he's and he's the only character who doesn't change at some point. Job gains the ability to control people. And the way he calls him is he just puts him to sleep in his truck and he wakes up and goes, okay, Job, I'm on my way. As if he's got like a Bluetooth headset on and you can't see it.
Or it's like The Shining or something.
It's The Shining.
Yes, he's shining.
I'm on my way. That's pretty funny.
I think we've covered pretty much everything about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this. I've heard of this movie. I've heard it mentioned several times throughout the years, and so excited to watch it, you know, with a live audience and with y'all's commentary with it. I'm sure that'll be really, really great. You mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if people listening to this want to buy some tickets, you can find those on the Texas Theater website. And it'll be this Thursday.
And you can go to mockyhorror.com. We finally have a website.
Awesome.
With ticket links and other shows we have coming up. We have another one coming up this month at the end of 26. So it looks like a charity show we do.
Oh, great.
With
you have a movie lined up for that one too?
Yeah, we're bringing back the giant Gila monster.
Nice.
It's for a group. It's for a thing called LAN All Night, which is like a weekend like gaming festival out at the Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh, great.
We did the Captain America show there and they went nuts. I knew it was going to go well because festival crowds they're there to have fun, but it went insanely well. And they were like, you have to come back.
Is there anything else? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's it.
Sorry.
We do Twitch streams. Tuesdays at 8 PM Central. So, those are pretty fun, and you can come and make comments and like rip along with us too.
Yeah,
so fun.
And this week we've been doing leading up to this, we've been doing all bad Stephen King movies, but the week of the show we do a good Stephen King movie, one that we've mentioned on this. Okay. So that's kind of a hint.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and our Twitch channel, I think it's just the Mocky Horror Picture Show, right? Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Perfect. And Albie, I think you have a podcast you were going to plug as well.
I'm the host and producer of the Scare Me podcast, and we just starting this summer, we're actually joining in with the Kings of Horror podcast network, so I'm excited about that.
Nice. Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, very exciting stuff. Thank you all again for making some time to speak with me, and hopefully our listeners, I'll see y'all there at the show. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.